podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Rashford, he's in here, he scores! Marcus Rashford takes yet another step up the ladder. And it's a lad from Manchester who scored.
Only chance in my team like Man U. Yeah, like Man
U.
Thank you, man. Bars in my head like shampoo. Violate my squad, might bang you. Only chance in my team like Man U. Yeah, like Man U.
Manny.
Ready!
Description. Oh. How about
Martial is isolated. Skirtle here.
Oh yes! Welcome to Manchester United. Anthony Martial.
I beat for backstage till the bar's done. Slap one, slap two, that she danced on. Like Rashford, I'm a fast one.
Thank you, man.
Bars in my head like shampoo. Violate my squad, might bang you.
Bang.
Only chance in my team like Man U.
Yeah, like Man U.
Thank you, man. Bars in my head like shampoo. Violate my squad, might bang you.
Bang.
Only chance in my team like Man U.
Yeah, like Man U.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Mugga. I'm joined this week by Stevie. How's it going, Stevie?
Yeah, what's good, man? What are you telling me?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You know, it's pre-season. We're over the Euros. We're over the penalty misses.
Some of us are.
Yeah, I know.
Some of us are partying with diamonds and hats and bandanas, but we
don't you dare. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Listen, I still remember that voice note you sent the day of the final where you were basically crying, if I'm being honest. I know it's going to take you a few weeks. But yeah, we're in that period now where it's United focused and we're spending our time going back and forth with the ops about everything that makes our team primed to go for the title and everything that means their team is going to finish mid-table. And this week we're joined by guest Dre. How's it going, Dre?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. How's everyone doing?
Yeah, we're good. We're good, man. We're just kind of, yeah, hoping a couple of these signings get over the line and then we can just get into the new season. For those who are listening for the first time, which I'm hoping isn't too many people at this point, and you guys have stayed with us the whole season, tell us a bit about, yeah, how you got into supporting Manchester United, who your favourite player is, and what your favourite memory is. I didn't even tell you this before the pod, so I've put you right on the spot, but I always find those are the best answers.
Just been supporting Man United since I was a little kid. My brother supported them, so I literally pretty much followed him, really. Favourite United player growing up, probably Cantona. Favourite United memory, Barcelona 99. I was literally just turned 10 when that happened as well.
Okay,
perfect timing.
Cool. Thank you, Dre. Let's get into it. So obviously we're in the preseason mixer. And we started off our preseason campaign with a 2-1 win against Derby County. I think in that regard, we were doing Wazza a little favour there. We know things aren't going so well over at Derby. So we thought we'd chuck him a bone with that. I'll start with you, Stevie, because I know you checked out the game and, you know, you're a historian of the game.
What that definition of checked out the game is, bro.
What were your thoughts on the performance? I know, obviously, all jokes aside, you're not somebody who gets too engrossed in the preseason games, especially when it's kind of a lineup made out of players who we know won't be starting once the season starts. But what were your takeaways? Just to run through our team, we had Heaton in goal. We had Wan-Bissaka at right back. We had a Tuanzebe and Mengi centre back partnership. Brandon Williams at left back. We had James Garner, Dylan Levitt, Tahith Chong, Juan Mata, Jesse Lingard came on. Yeah, sorry, Jesse Lingard came on. So Alanga, and then we had Greenwood up top. Chong and Palestri scored, and then Derby County just had a bunch of guys I'm not really that fussed about naming. So I'll start with Tahith Chong. Listen, he's been with us for a while now. He even had that little spell at left back in that Europa League game last, the season before last, where people were like, hold on, we might have a player here. Took his goal well, and he's linked to Birmingham in terms of going there on loan. And Lee Boyer promised, if he comes here, I will make him a better player. What were your thoughts about his performance yesterday, and what we could potentially see from him if he does go to the Championship?
Let's face it, man. Chong is here to make up squad numbers. Let's not sugarcoat it. I think today, from all the highlights I saw of him, he was playing on the right wing, which isn't something that I've seen from him previously. Didn't look any more talented there than I've seen him on the left, to be honest. So with Chong, I think it's probably about getting him minutes now so that we can try and up his market value. I don't know, a young 4 or 5 million, I'd take that for him, invest that in some wages. I don't think there's too much to be had for his United career, to be honest. I'd like to see how he progresses. I don't know if he's Championship standard. Not to say that's not his his level, but I think he's probably he'd probably be better suited abroad. So I could see him probably playing in the Dutch league for one of the mid-table clubs.
Okay, so you're talking about maybe like the more physical side of the game, probably a bit too much for him.
Whenever I've seen him, it just seems a bit lightweight on the ball. So I could see him doing something similar. I don't know how Gomez has got on in Portugal, but I think those sort of...
Angel Gomez.
Yeah.
He's done really well. He went to a lower. Yeah. He went to a lower kind of mid-table, this sort of Portuguese side. And he's done really well for himself, and obviously where he's going back to Lille, the league champions. I expect him to go from strength to strength. Listen, with Angel Gomez, the fear was never that he didn't have enough ability. And to be fair, when he came on, he always used to impress to me. Like, he also always looked like he should be getting more minutes on one matter, for example. But they decided to go another way. You know how it is here. When you're too small, they think you're not big enough to play, and they start worrying about your ability to get stuck in, etc. But I'll come across to you, Dre, in terms of Tahith Chong and, I guess, our other goal scorer in Palestri. From what you've seen yesterday and otherwise, have we got a player there in either of those two?
Definitely not in Tahith Chong. He's definitely... he's just there because we have no one else, pretty much. Like, just like Stevie said, like, he's never going to make it United. Probably never make it in English football. He's best guy somewhere like going back to Germany or maybe Spain or Holland, somewhere like that. Like, I know Ollie probably, you know, when he first came in, he said he was going to give Chong and Gomez a chance in the team. I think hollow words, innit? Like, especially just cut that experiment with Tahith Chong and just, you know.
Do you know my thing with Ollie as well? Yeah, I feel like for all like his faults and stuff, I think he knows a player when he sees one. He's played with good players. His Bruno obsession aside, I understand that. For the most part, he knows the player when he sees one. So obviously, he's not going to come in out in the press and like criticize these lads and say they're not good enough, etc. But I agree with you in regards to Tahith Chong. What about Palestri?
From the brief clips I saw of him yesterday, he looked good. But he's definitely not ready for Premier League football. I feel like alone is definitely the best thing for him. He's definitely more talented than Tahith Chong. I think he's at Alaves though, after him, someone like that in Spain.
He was at Alaves last season, and they want to bring him back.
I think he should go back there or go back to Spain alone.
He's got that Diego Forlán, he's got that Riquelme co-sign. Those are two big boy ballers. I'll be honest, I didn't watch much of him last season. I saw him when he was playing for the under 23 side. But those who saw him last season and those who watched the full game yesterday said definitely looks like they've got a player there. I would like him to potentially play for a team a bit higher up the table in Spain. But if the choice is between him playing for a higher quality team around better players or him playing week in, week out, I think I'll go with him playing week in, week out, because I think, where he's really young and he hasn't had much experience in South America, you just want him to get as many reps as he potentially can. Obviously, we had Greenwood. He didn't go to the Euro due to injury. He started up front, so it was good to see Greenwood out there as well. Wan-Bissaka, Congo starting right back, or future starting right back. He got a run out as well. Tuanzebe, was interesting to see him because he's linked to going out on loan. He wants to play consistently. Obviously, he kind of had that debut against, or not debut, he had that performance against PSG, and Ollie just really didn't use him very much for the rest of the season. What do you guys think of the whole Tuan Zabe going out on loan then? Are you guys in support of it? Do you think he's somebody who's good enough to be starting now, or do you think he needs just a bit more experience to see if he's worth it or not?
I think he's good enough to be starting now. I think the problem is I don't think we have the luxury of giving him like 10, 12, 15 games almost to kind of find his feet and cement his place in this United side. That right-sided centre-back spot is a glaring weakness for us. And so we kind of just need to fill it and fill it with quality. The problem with Tuan Zebe is that his United career has been so start-stop. He's been injury-prone. He's not managed to get a run of games. Last season, he didn't really get into the first team, and for some reason or another, didn't convince Solskjaer. So I think, yeah, the loan is definitely needed at a Premier League club. If he goes out and proves that he can play week in, week out, I think we'll probably, at this point, just look to get money for him, because obviously we've got Tanguy coming through the door as well. So I don't know if he's ever going to make it as United first choice CB, given that we're obviously in the market for one now. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's got the attributes to do it. But, yeah, it just hasn't sort of worked out.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to disagree. You know how I feel about Lindelof anyway. And I think where, obviously, it looks like we're lined up to spend a good chunk of money on Varane, which you can't be mad at with his quality. Being able to keep these lads who've come through the club from a young age, they understand the club, and they're good players, definitely at least squad level player. We should be making every effort to do so. I don't think he was necessarily used enough, but he again struggled with injuries a bit last season. And he might just be, you know, you've got those players whose bodies just can't necessarily keep up with the rigors of the game. And you kind of see that sometimes they never get it. And then sometimes it takes them getting to like their late 20s where they'll have a few years run of being able to just stay fit and play. And if that's the case with Axel, then obviously we've got to go and do what's best for us. We've got a few more preseason games coming before the start of the season. We've got QPR away on the 24th. We're at home against Brentford on the 28th, away against Preston on the 31st, and at home against Everton on the 7th. So very much keeping it domestic this year, which is understandable with the season that we've had and with the fact that quite a few of our players were playing in the Euros. You can understand why we don't want to go on any long-haul flights this summer for all intents and purposes. But I thought we'd talk a bit about our transfer news. It feels like every day there's some sort of transfer news about players coming in, players going out. And I think I wanted to just sit with you both for a bit and just get your thoughts. I'm going to name the names, and I just want to get you guys' thoughts in regards to what's happening with them. So I'm going to start with a man who played on Saturday, Jesse Lingard. Ollie's quotes were, the Jesse that we saw at West Ham, that's the real Jesse. Got his confidence back, etc., etc. We're going to keep him around. But he's also kind of been linked to £30 million moves, etc., etc. So, Dre, I wanted to firstly get your thoughts on Jesse Lingard as a player, and then secondly, get your thoughts on should he stay, should he go, how hard of a bargain we should be pushing. Yeah, go on.
I've never really been a total back on Jesse Lingard. Like, he's a bit hit and miss for me. I think he actually sell. I think get $30 million, probably even $35 million for him. I just feel like he needs to have a fresh start away from Man United. And him coming back from West Ham into United, he's not going to start for Man United. Like, he's not a part of the starting 11. Is he better than some of the players on the bench? I'm not too sure. I think he should just go, leave, fresh start, take what we can get for him and just move on, to be honest.
You see, the thing with Ollie, because he coached a lot of these guys when they were younger, I think there's that element of nostalgia as well. And where you've got Jesse, who's kind of a fringe England international and probably can be aggrieved that he wasn't taken to the World Cup this summer along with a few other guys, I can understand why you wouldn't want to get rid of him. And we know, like, from a few seasons ago, he was a guy who used to get big goals in games, and he scored between, like, 1 in 3, 1 in 4 goals. But in the last couple of years, he's had a lot happen off the pitch, and it's affected his confidence. Stevie, are you in agreement with Dre Reed getting rid of Jesse Lingard? Do you think he's a player who we should hang around, keep him as a squad player? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think looking at Lingard, I think Ollie's playing, he's just playing this cleverly. I think when he says that Lingard is part of United's plans, I think he said something similar for was it Lukaku? Who am I thinking about? And then we ended up shipping them. So I think if you look at the makeup of the squad, I don't see where he's going to get minutes. Lingard, really and truly, I think his favorite position is at 10. If you look at who's playing there now, Bruno, and possibly Van der Beek as the backup. Then we've got Martial and Cavani taking up the positions up top. And then we've got Rashford and Sancho. So I think if we do keep him, maybe it will be for cover for Rashford if he goes and gets his injury surgery. But I think we're really just trying to maximise his value. He's a good player, but he's not United level and he's not United standard. So I think, obviously, Solskjaer's wary of the temperament and the morale of the dressing room as well. I don't think he can just come out and say that Lingard's not part of his plans. I don't think that would do anyone any harm. I don't think that would do any benefit to his transfer value as well. So I think he's got to keep it coy, but I don't see him being at United past January, to be honest.
Oh, so you could see him potentially staying this window, but then going in January.
I think if we don't get the money for him, because I think, right, we're looking
for... He's got a year left, right? 30.
Yeah.
So,
So I'm just trying to understand your transfer strategy there. So he's got a year left. We keep him to January. What's he then worth to us in January? I mean, if we don't sell him this window, we're probably not gonna. Yeah. Can you explain that, Stevie?
Well, I don't think we're gonna let him go for free. So either he'll sign and we'll try and get some value for him, or we'll ship him off in the summer. But I don't think we'll let him go for free. But I would be very surprised if this time next year, Lingard is still a Man United player.
Okay.
Especially, and I think as well, obviously, World Cup is in 2022. He knows he's on the fringes of the England squad. So he's not going to settle for minimal minutes, which is what will happen at United.
Agreed. And I think with the form that he had at West Ham, listen, we can call it a purple patch or whatever you want to call it. But extrapolating that over a whole season, we're talking about, you know, 10 goals, 10 assists, top 6-7 finish. That's very much knocking on the door of the England team. And at the end of the day, Jesse's at the age now where we saw it with loads of Man United stalwarts. Phil Neville, Nicky Butt, they'll kind of come through, play a bit, get a couple runs as starters, but then become squad players. And eventually they get to the stage where you just want to play week in, week out. You just want to enjoy your football. So I think Jesse's at that stage now. And I think for his character, for his personality, if it's not home Manchester, London's a perfect city for him to live in and enjoy and build his brand for sure. So, I'm with both of you where I see more happening on that front. And, yeah, I think with the form he's shown, he's an England international like we've discussed. And he was like a key player for a team that finished in the European spots. 30 million is the going rate for me. 30 million, yeah. And we have to, especially after the year we've just had, we have to get into the habit of actually getting good value for our players. Like, you're getting Chelsea selling young CBs for 20, 25 million. You got Liverpool selling fringe strikers for 19 million. Obviously, both being English, we should also be getting that Prem English tax for our talents too. Yeah. Teams are charging us more because we're Man U. Let's at least make some money back on the back end. Cool. Another player I wanted to discuss with you guys, linked to Burnley, but we're costing them at 25 million and apparently we've priced them out. A certain Daniel James, I'll come to you first. Just again, to get your thoughts on Daniel James. Supposedly had a good Euros. Don't know if I would agree with that. And what you think about those rumours and if you think it ends up happening. That's for you, Dre. Sorry, yeah, that's for you.
I would even sell it for £25. He's absolutely pony. He's still crap, man. Gosh. I don't know. 25 million is not pricing him out, right?
The thing is, yeah, he is for sure limited. But I think one thing I acknowledge is he's got attributes that make him a threat. And at a mid-table, a Burnley sort of side, he look a much better player than he does for us, I think. And I think
I've always said Daniel James needs a coach, and Bolly's not a coach.
Mm.
Someone could coach Daniel James to play football, he'd actually be a good player.
Do you think Sloan Dyche is a coach?
Oh, hell no.
Leeds
would have been perfect for him. He should have went to Leeds because Bielsa would have shown him the way how to be a footballer. But Burnley, I don't even care. As long as he leaves and we can get some sort of return on what we bought him for. How much you buying for? 15 million or something like
15,
that?
Yeah.
15,
yeah. 25, 20 million, I'll take that. As long as he's gone. But I'm not doing another season with him and the team. Like, no way.
Do you know what? It's mad. When I did the attacking options, I didn't even mention him because I just completely forgot about him. But I think 25 million is a fair valuation for Dan James, to be honest. I don't think all of that value is included in his current ability, but obviously he's still young. He's British as well. He has resale value. And for a team that's quite low down in the table, like his ability to break at speed is almost like it's like being a target man almost. It just relieves pressure from your side and it gives you another way to go and score a goal. So I know he breaks rapidly and more often than not, he loses the ball. But on those few occasions where he's able to do something with it, and obviously at a smaller side, you'll have more space to exploit as well. I think he could be, I won't say a potent weapon, but I think he could be a useful signing for some of those mid-table clubs.
Okay, interesting. I think, again, I'm in agreement. I think in my mind, 50 to 60 million for those two, taking off 6 to 7 million off your wage book. That's good business. Yeah, that's the sort of business a serious club wants to do. And I feel like when you look at the amount of names that were playing in that friendly and the amount of players that are still to return, the squad is bloated for sure. A certain one matter played. Why is he still here? I don't understand.
It's vibes and experience, isn't it? He's just positive energy, isn't he? I don't know.
He's like a shrink, isn't it? He's just there for like
positive
vibes.
He's that sort of guy that, you know, when you've got like a League Cup fixture on Tuesday and a game on Thursday, you just fling him in for experience and then you're like, go out and enjoy it, one. And he'll do all the interviews for you with a smiley face as well.
He's been here for 8 years, you know.
Yeah.
He's been here for...
I think also a part of it is a plan to get him into the coaching team as well. So
that's from the first time I've heard that. What's that based on?
So probably his temperament, in it, and his tactical awareness. I don't know, man.
The old boys club, man.
I imagine Mata would be a good coach to have.
Absolutely, what, please, sir?
I said, I think, yo.
What is it based?
I just made this hypothesis 5 seconds ago. It's not based on anything. But everyone calls him an intelligent player, innit? So you'd assume he'd be an intelligent coach.
Is that how it works? Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Fair enough.
If Darren Fletcher can do it, then surely one Mata can.
Maybe. I'm trying to understand what we're trying to do there. He's been around for a minute, but yeah. Listen, we ain't struggling for money, but I just see him as somebody who takes up space in the squad that other players could be using to get experience. Cool. All right, we'll leave one matter there. Let's talk about, obviously, the news continues to bubble on. Rafael Varane, day after day, the reports get stronger and stronger linking him. Everything that I've read, I read an article in The Athletic, said there's a 40% increase in muscle injuries. But I also read an article in The Athletic that...
That's good. Yeah. I've been waiting to drop that.
I haven't been waiting. I've literally made it up on the spot. That's what I do, man. Impromptu. But I read an article in The Athletic talking about Real Madrid's financial situation. So they're going to be asked to bring down their wage bill by the Spanish FA. And on top of that, they need to recoup some of the funds that they lost by not having a stadium. And obviously where they're rebuilding and they have got a new stadium coming, they need to keep the cash flow coming in, and we saw that last season where they're selling off promising youngsters like Hakimi on the low. So everything suggests where he wants a big bumper contract, so 250k a week or so, and where they can get 40 to 60 million for him. Everything suggests that he's going to go. I know he's really close with Pogba as well, and I think a lot of these players we're linked with are all part of a piece of us trying to convince Pogba to stay as well. Listen, we're a serious club. We're going in a serious direction. Stay with us. You can win things with us. So it's just a matter of time. I'll come to you, Dre, because I'm pretty sure, Stevie, you've given me your opinion on Varane two or three times.
Opinions on Varane. I'm all out.
But Dre, with this being your first appearance, I'd like to hear your thoughts on Varane and potentially what he brings. I think we may have discussed it before, but yeah, just for our listeners, just to hear what you have to say about him.
If it happens, it's a good signing. But when it comes to Man United, if is a big if. I want to get gassed that we're going to sign him, but this is a board that takes weeks and months to just complete one transfer, in it. So I don't know if this is going to happen, but if it does happen, it's a good signing. Him next to Maguire will make Maguire better and will improve the back line as well. Like, we can push another 10 yards further forward with Varane and the team. Like, we can get rid of Lindelof, he's crap. And then, but it's just, I'm not too sure.
I've broken down the economics of the deal to you. Where is your fear coming from?
For a new deal at Real Madrid.
They can't afford to give him a new deal. They can't afford to. And they've kind of messed up in a way where they need to bring their wage bill down. They've gone and gotten Alaba, and he's on 300-400k a week. Yeah, they want him to play at the back. He wants to play in midfield. So that's a whole situation over there. So they need to get rid of Varane, but they're going to need to get rid of a few more bodies. So where you've got Perez doing his salesman spiel about, listen, we've got young talents. We need to have young talent, trust in them. They obviously got rid of Ramos for that, partly for that reason as well. I'm thinking more players are going to be leaving, not just Varane. I don't know what they're going to do.
Our question is motivation as well. Like,
okay, let's have a conversation about that. So
he's won everything over the last few years. Then you come to Man United, where we ain't really won nothing in the last nearly coming up 10 years.
But then you've got to want to challenge himself, though, innit?
But it depends on the sort of player he is, because I think what you find is that, yeah, if he's a player who has a chip on his shoulder, for sure, he'll come and he'll want to be part of the face of us going back to our past glory. But for a lot of these players, Real Madrid is a pinnacle. And once I've done the Real Madrid thing and I've been successful at Real Madrid, everything else is just by the by. Like, you saw Ozil, he left Real Madrid. The motivation wasn't the same at Arsenal. You've seen ADM. To be fair, ADM's gone to France and he's done really well for himself, so I won't necessarily put him in that grouping. But for most of these players, Real Madrid, Barcelona, that's the pinnacle of football. So they come over here, 28, 29, so he's at his peak. When I caught up with a Real Madrid fan, they said, what you get from Varane, 6 good weeks, 1 bad week. 6 good weeks, 1 bad week.
That sounds about right.
I mapped out across the season. It's maybe a month and a half of poor form. Obviously, it won't necessarily be.
But what we need is basically him and Maguire to interchange when they want to play badly. Just start doing it together, and hopefully one will cover the other.
Exactly. So you talk about a month or so of poor form. And listen, we got Eric Bailly as well. He's overqualified as a third choice. I think it's just down to Ollie loves Maguire, and Maguire's a colossus in terms of playing every single game. Mm. He was using him in the League Cup games against the crap teams. He was playing him in every round of he does not drop Maguire. So I think there's something to be done in terms of his balance. And listen, Maguire's coming off a brilliant Euros. Certain people on the pod, we call him a leader. Don't think I'd agree with that. But if we're talking about Shaw, Maguire, Varane, and Wan-Bissaka, as just a back line alone, where do we see that ranking in the league?
I'd say 2.
Okay, who you got number 1?
Actually, sorry. It depends. It depends what version of Van Dijk and Gomez come back in it. So
okay.
At number 1, I would have had City's defense. Okay. But yeah, to be fair, you know what? Tuchel was Chelsea, the whole team, not necessarily the individuals in that defensive four, but the whole team defend really well as well. I like Mendy as well. So actually, to be honest, yeah, Chelsea, City, Liverpool have got good defenses in their own rights.
So you're saying top four defense, yeah?
Yeah, top four defense. I don't know where in that four. I think everybody will have to start playing and then we'll see. But then we also have the problem, and I think for me, like, we can't expect to sign Varane and then catapult us into title challenges. That DM spot needs to be addressed, man.
I was going to ask about that. So the sound bites that are coming out are that Ollie wants to go to a 4-3-3 next season. We haven't been linked with any DMs, really. I'm hearing murmurs about McTominay playing us at single pivot. So a couple of questions. How do you feel about us moving to a 4-3-3? That's what I'll start with. Firstly, I'll start with you here, Stevie. How do you feel about us moving to a 4-3-3, and what potential impact do you see that having on the team?
I think a 4-3-3, if we're playing FIFA, is great. We get everyone in the team. You know what I mean? We get all the bullies in the team. In reality, though, we can't play a 4-3-3 unless we have the correct personnel to play a 4-3-3. And if we're playing McTominay by himself in that anchor position, it's going to be terrible. We're going to get a worse version of Rice at the Euros, like inability to pass forward. I mean, we saw McTominay at the Euros and he bombed. So I wouldn't want to see him taking up that position. I don't think Fred can do it either. So either we're going to have to play Garner there and he's an unknown quantity, or we're going to have to try and find someone. But I think it's a bit concerning. We're mid-July now. We haven't been linked to the DM, so I don't know where one is going to come from. But yeah, I think the 4-3-3 move, it give us a lot of attacking impetus. It, in theory, would free Pogba, as we say every season. But yeah, I mean, we need the personnel behind him.
Okay, cool. So that's your thoughts. Dre, I'll come to you to ask about, okay, so you've spoken about the DM. So what impact do we see that potentially having, a 4-3-3 potentially having on Bruno Fernandes? And what impact do we see that having on whoever we choose to have up front, Cavani or Greenwood, or even the forgotten man, Anthony Martial? Seen a lot of Anthony Martial on the treadmill and propaganda coming from his missus on Snapchat. So that's interesting. But what impact do we see that 4-3-3 having on Bruno and then our striker?
Well, I think Bruno will put a leash on Bruno, because...
Okay, do you trust him? You trust him in a 4-3-3. Obviously, we know his quality comes from the numbers he's able to put up. So what I'm asking is, what impact do you see the 4-3-3 having on Bruno's ability to put numbers up?
I think if Oli tells him to do a specific thing, he will do it.
Really? I think he just does what he wants.
But I feel Oli told him last season, yeah, you're the creative smart, do whatever you want. But in Portugal, he plays a specific role. He's not very good. We saw that in the Euros.
Mm.
But he does a role in it. So I feel like, but my thing is with Bruno and Pogba, pressing, the defensive positioning, that's where I'm going to be a bit.
Listen, it's like Harry Potter and Lord Voldemort. Neither can live while the other survives, you know? So essentially, you have to choose one. Is it the Dark Lord Bruno, or is it the boy who lived, Paul Pogba? But you have to choose one, essentially. I think if you want to get the best out of either, you have to complement them with a player who isn't the other one. I think with Pogba, like, to this day, I always say, and people always kind of, well, a few people, some people agree, other people roll their eyes. For me, I really want his 90% of his focus to be forward-facing. 80 to 90% of his focus to be forward-facing. Our most advanced midfielder, our number 8, who's linking up. We know he can carry the ball. We know he can play defense splitting passes. We know he can shoot. We know he can get on the end of things. We know he can beat players off the dribble. And we know he's efficient for the most part in terms of his use of the ball. You then want him beside a controlling central midfielder who's going to contribute about 50-50. 50% going forward, 50% contributing defensively, and then obviously you've got your defensive midfield specialist. Again, with Bruno, whatever Bruno may be, you'd want him to do that, a similar role to what I've just described Pogba doing. I want you to be forward-facing. I want you to be creating chances. I want you to be getting forward, getting on the end of self-defense, splitting passes and whatnot. I think if we try and go down the route of playing the two of them, the person that has to play behind them to make that...
Yeah, bro, it's a mad thing. You need to basically play 4-4-3. We need 12 players on the pitch. Because the space they are going to have to cover will be a mad thing.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Like, because even Kante, obviously, we know he gets about the pitch for France and for Chelsea. Even he was slightly exposed by Pogba, but obviously they take that. They take the good with the bad. But if you've got him and you've got Bruno as well, and Bruno's most effective, like, further forward, where we're going to allow him to get goals. If we take the goals, like, take the amount of chances he's going to get away from him, then he's really contributing nothing, isn't he? So I don't know if I want him any deeper playing as an eight beside Pogba.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Now, I'll be honest, I question the decision making around that with Bruno in mind. You know me, man. I want to cash in on him.
Well, I question the validity of the report itself. Boy.
Oh, do you? Okay. Yeah. So, as far as you're concerned, this is Bruno's team. And moving to a 4-3-3 does not benefit Bruno.
That's not what I said.
Yeah, I know that's not what you said, but what makes you question the validity of the 4-3-3 claims?
What is it based on?
I think it's based on, obviously, those in the know. Like, they didn't come out and say we want to play 3-5-2, did they?
I could have made that report up, man.
Nah, not really. Like, why would you? But okay, But my thing is, to what end? Like, why would you come out and make that up? What do you benefit from?
Why do tabloids make anything up for clicks, innit?
Yeah, but okay. But the thing is, what is the... Okay, Man United want to play 4-3-3.
Yeah.
What clicks do you even get from that?
Yeah, because we're all like, oh, yeah. We're going to play Pogba in midfield and we're going to get Bruno. Let's click it. Let's read it. And now here we are talking about it.
Yeah, we talk about everything, though. But there's nothing that we won't necessarily talk about.
What I'm just saying is, it doesn't... Like, if I think about it logically, and any footballer...
You know about your logic. God.
Yeah, Maguire being a leader in that, yeah?
Yeah, among other things.
if we think about this logically, we don't have a DM in our... in our first 11 capable of playing that position competently. We're not linked
in our opinion. Is that Ollie's opinion?
I think it is, otherwise he probably would have done it already. That's okay. My assumption. And then
there's a bit of logic in that, so I allow that.
Yeah. And we're not linked with a DM, so it seems strange or odd for Ollie to be planning on that based on a team he doesn't currently have. I think that would be a bizarre way to go into the preseason. Unless he thinks that Ghana is the guy who's going to do it, but that would be a massive change in direction as well.
I heard they're looking to loan out Ghana again.
Yeah, that's what I heard as well.
Prem loan or Championship loan?
I think Championship loan. Not only for Forest, teams are after him.
Okay. Yeah, he did really well at Nottingham Forest, so I think we have a full season. And then what we bring him into the Prem next season. Okay, so I think something to look at. So in terms of that, until you kind of see like what solid links to a DM, Stevie, you're not buying it, yeah?
Yeah, no, I'm not buying that one, you know.
Okay, cool.
Another season of McTominay.
Can't do it. Yeah. Can't do it. Season. I'm with you. I can't do it. So obviously the news, Rashford's getting the surgery, so he's going to be out for 12 weeks or so.
Apparently he's still thinking about it.
Really?
Yeah. That's what Solskjaer said after the Derby match, I think. I might have been before, but he said he's still thinking about it. Obviously, he's on holiday, innit? So,
what's the thought process? I don't understand.
I don't know.
You're capping yourself as a player, man, and you're taking years off the other end of your career. We've seen a lot of these players want to play through injury and stuff, and it's great, but you're slowly ebbing away at your body, and your body's your currency. So I really do hope that he does. I think with the signing of Sancho, with Greenwood in there as well, we've got Martial whatever that's going to be. We've got Cavani as well, and we know that they like to put Pogba on the left at times as well. We've got enough different options up top that we should be able to survive for a few months without Rashford and let him come back at his best, at his best. We know that he's been injured for the last couple of seasons, the last 18 months or so. And to be honest, by the end of last season, it's a bit of a farce, if I'm being honest with you. And it's very difficult to get mad at a guy who's playing injured, but you're not helping us, you're not helping the team either. So I really hope that he does go through and get that done.
I think he needs the mental break as well. Like, it's just been go for him. He's been carrying United at times, he's carrying the children of England at times. And yeah, he's been playing injured, and now he's got racial abuse to deal with. I think, what was that report? He's like the second most racially abused sportsman in the world.
After LeBron James.
Bonkers.
Let's talk on that because we didn't talk about the kind of the aftermath of the penalties and everything we saw on last Monday's episode. But let's talk about that and that kind of hatred that he gets online. I'll start. Do you know what I find so interesting about it? I think a lot of it is linked to the stuff he did for the kids.
Yeah.
The proportion of people that dislike him for that. Yeah. And obviously we saw that coach who had the racist abuse. His own children benefited from Rashford's program from last summer. So, yeah, I just can't fathom that. But Dre, not to put you on the spot again, but just to get your thoughts in regards to just the aftermath of obviously the missed penalties we saw, that what he came out with, I thought was brilliant. I shed a tear reading his
we know you tweeted it.
You retweeted it.
Yeah, I just want to let the fans them know we're in tune with our emotions, isn't it?
Yeah. He shed a tear. But what was your thoughts on...
was loud. That picture spoke so much. Like, he looked... Well, yeah, he was obviously clearly alone, but yeah, it's crazy moments. Like, the pressure on him.
It's crazy. He's listen, anyway, yeah, Dre, give me your thoughts and then we'll talk a bit more about it.
You know what? If you think it's bad now, watch me goes to all these away games this season. He's gonna get it. But I think the support that United have to give him and Sancho between now, pretty much for the whole season, is going to be pivotal.
Like, yeah.
It kind of reminds me, I'm not gonna equate it to what Beckham went through in 98. But so similarly along those lines, where Beckham was the villain, like the newspapers had nooses around his neck, ready to hang man and all that shit. And then boom, he came back next season. Fergie had a word with him before the start of the season, and he had a phenomenal season. I'm not going to say Rashford and Sancho are going to do similar, but I feel like it's got to be, them two have got to move in a type of like me against the world mentality for this season. Mm-hmm. And United fans have got to support him as well. So that's the most important thing. Him going through the racial abuse he receives, I hope he was under no reasons that he wasn't going to get it if it didn't happen, if he missed the penalty, you know what I mean? Like, I think we all knew that they were going to get racially abused if we lost.
You know minute, honestly, bro, the minute we lost, the first thing that came... They are all black.
We're
finished.
Yeah.
And I think he's got to understand now. Hopefully, someone's told him. No matter what you do for people in this country, you are always black.
First and foremost. And you know what kills me even more so is that when people are saying don't racially abuse them, they were doing that thing where it's like, magical black man. Listen, Rashford's fed all these kids and Saka's like the sweetest kid. It's like, no, they're just human beings who deserve respect. They don't need to be magical black men for you to feel like you don't need to racially abuse them. Yeah. And it's absolutely ridiculous that that is where we're still at. And I think you're completely right. And even, again, to a further point is Cristiano Ronaldo after the 2006 World Cup with Wayne Rooney. Again, we know what the British press are like. And then he went on to have a brilliant season, the start of his ascension to becoming a football legend. And obviously with David Beckham, same thing again. So I'm hoping that Rashford and or Sancho able to have a big season and remind people why they are the talents that they are. And they are the futures of this club. They're the futures of England football team as well. Really well said there, Dre. I don't know if you wanted to add anything off the back of that, Stevie. I know you were in tears after they missed, so sorry to bring that up, but did you have anything else to add?
No, I think, I think everyone said everything that needs to be said before. I think if we just, we slightly come off the racing thing and then look towards Rashford's season now. Rashford's what, 23, 24?
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the kind of time where really you've got to show. I think that 24 age going on 25 is where you're no longer considered a young player or a young talent. He's pretty much one of the most senior members in the United team, which is actually kind of bonkers, just given when he actually started playing for us. So you'd like to hope that this season, this the racism thing will just give him an extra drive. The England disappointment will give him extra motivation. And obviously the way...
Racism VAT, yeah?
Yeah. Hopefully we just see him turn demon time, bro. That's what we need.
That's a new one. Racism VAT. You're a crazy guy, Stevie, man.
So, I'm hoping it happens, innit? Like you said, it happened with Beckham. He had the best season he had for United after the World Cup. Same with Ronaldo. They turned into machines. So, yeah, Rashford, boy, he needs to. Because if he doesn't as well, and it goes the other way, oh, he's in trouble, boy. If you think he got racial abuse then...
When the United fans were joining as well. When you said, Trey, that he needs the United fans, and always going to be... If he don't turn it up for United, there won't be a stadium in England. There won't be a stadium in England you can hide.
Yeah. It might benefit him, yeah, not playing until about, what's it going to be, like October time.
Hopefully, man. I just want him to just sort himself out, man.
But that's the thing. When he comes back, yeah, I don't know if you've seen our fixture list, but we've got like a crazy run of games. And obviously, he's going to need time to get his form and his confidence back. His confidence after he saw that note is on the floor a bit. So, boy.
Let me go through the games in October.
November is literally...
Yeah.
2nd of October, we've got Everton at home. 2nd of October, we've got Everton at home. 16th of October, we've got Leicester City away. 23rd of October, we've got Liverpool at home. 30th of October, we've got Tottenham away. Then we go into December. The 6th of November, we've got Manchester City at home. The 20th of November, we've got Watford away. The 27th of November, we've got Chelsea away. 30th of November, we've got Arsenal at home. So, yeah, those 8 weeks are... absolutely ridiculous. And I'm hoping there's some fixture list kind of razzmatazz that happens to mix that up, because that does not look pretty at all. And obviously that's still the first half of the season, but that will play a big part in how our season goes. So you're gone.
I was going to say, it's going to be interesting to see how Sancho settles as well, because obviously he's a big price tag. United fans been waiting to see him for 2 years. He didn't really light up the Euros, so there's going to be expectation on him. And
I'm putting it mildly, to be honest.
Yeah. So, and I think the perception of Sancho is that we're going to see this Sancho that we saw at Dortmund. And I think if you think that, then you should probably look at Werner and look at the space he got for RB Leipzig and compare that to his struggles at Chelsea. I'm not saying the same thing's going to happen, but it's a more difficult league. We don't play the same way Dortmund do, so we shouldn't expect him to be this explosive version that we see at Dortmund, probably closer to probably what we saw for England. Obviously, we know he's better than that, but we just need to give him a bit of time. Hopefully, the pressure doesn't creep up on him too much. Hopefully he starts well, man.
Yeah, it's gonna be quite the price tag and quite the expectation on Sancho. Yeah. And yeah, we see how many of those goals he scores are like 3-on-2 counter attacks, so the defending isn't quite like that here. But listen, I've said, like, he's not successful. That will say more to me about the management team than it will say about Jadon Sancho. He's a player who likes to join up with other players and combine little 1-2s, getting into spaces. I'll use my mind. Okay, if I can't beat you, let's keep the ball recycled. If I think I can beat you, take you on, and I'm gonna beat you more often than I don't. that doesn't necessarily bode well to playing fullback with Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Someone said actually he'd work really well with Van der Beek.
He would work really well with Van der Beek.
I could see that, yeah.
He would work really well with Van der Beek.
He's not going to get preseason.
Nah. But we mentioned right back, and the links of Kieran Trippier, they're back. So where we were valuing him at 20 million, Atletico Madrid were valuing him at 40 million. It looks like something's gone on over there, and they've kind of recalibrated, and they're much closer to our price tag. I'll come to you first this time, Stevie. What are your thoughts on us getting Kieran Trippier in as our backup right back?
So Kieran Trippier as a backup right back is fine. I don't have any problems with that. He's not the greatest defender in the world, but he gives you something that Wan-Bissaka doesn't. And he's experienced, and I would like to think that playing 2 years under Simeone, his defensive or his lack of defensive ability that he had at Spurs, I would have hoped some of those have been corrected. But at 20 million, and he's approaching 30, it's a bit of a strange one. I'd assume we'd want to put our resources somewhere else, given that we have...
He's 31 in September.
Yeah, given that we have Dalot, given that we have...
Led,
given that we also... I mean, Brandon Williams is useless, but he can play there. Do you know what I mean? So I just think... I know Wan-Bissaka is going to play a lot of games anyway. Trippier would only be brought in to take some of that workload off Wan-Bissaka. Do we value that at 20 million? I think that's a bit high.
For a backup player, English, I think that's about 20 million in this market. Like, if Wan-Bissaka was to get injured, which we're lucky he hasn't at any point, and Trippier had to start for a period, you'd be like, not happy, but
yeah,
you know? I think so. I mean, I wouldn't be
mad at us keeping Dalot and letting him do that.
Either. What do you think? I agree. What do you think of Dalot, though? I mean,
he's not amazing, is he? But as a second choice, as a second choice right back, fair enough, innit?
I mean, when he used to come on, he used to be shit, though. So we say fair enough, but it's a bit of a sticky one.
Yeah, man. If only Brandon Williams is better, man.
He's shit. He's worse than Dalot.
He looks worse as a right back than he does as a left back.
He's
right back. It's
baffling. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't know. Surely, maybe we should try Tellez there, man.
Passion got him into the first team, and he's tried to use passion to keep him there, but it's not. Listen, you're not that guy, buddy. You're not that guy, man. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. We're just in a funny place where we need shrewd and correct moves in the market. And if we can make those moves, we are very much a threat to be a title challenger. But if we again go down the route and sign two or three duds, we're screwed again, man. Yeah. And we've set ourselves up. We know Ollie's going to get that new contract based on the progress that we're making. So I just hope that he makes sure they get him the players that he wants. Yeah. We'll watch. It's a watching brief, isn't it? So let's finish up with some listeners' questions. First one is from Sweet Chin Melody. Why do you think United fans wanted to sell players cheap just to get rid of United's stance of not underselling players? And why has it taken this long for us not to get mugged off in the transfer market? So I think this is in regards to fans talking about the Lingard and Dan James prices and saying that, listen, we should just take whatever we want, whatever they offer. And other fans saying, no, we've always done that. And when we compare how we sell to the Liverpools, the Chelseas, etc., it's not good enough. I'll come to you, Dre. What do you think that is about our fans, where we're just kind of happy to settle, but on the other hand, also demand expensive transfers coming in too?
I feel like United fans just need to wake up and start smelling the coffee. We overbuy, we overspend on players, and like, we've undersold on players for so long that we could have got good money for a lot of players that we've sold, and we've just got rid of them because we just want to get rid of them. We need to start moving like we're a top team. Top teams sell their players at the price they want to sell them, and teams buy them for that price. So us selling, why would we buy Dan James and then sell him 2 years later for exactly the same price we bought him for? Like, in a way, Dan James' stock hasn't really gone down. in the 2 years he's been at Man United. It just hasn't delivered on the potential we thought we were going to get. So 25 million, boom, take it, go. Jesse Lingard, if he's out of contract in a year's time, 30 million is good money. Take that, go. Like, if someone comes in for Van der Beek and offers 45, 50, we've got to have a hard look and be like, all right, cool, take that, go. Like, if we can use that to get another player, a CDM, then boom. Like, we've got to start moving like a top team because we're not far off being a title contender, innit? So, to me, I feel like we've just got to be a bit more realistic in how we view transfers, innit?
Yeah, I hear you. I think with the United fans, it's when you've been watching these players for so long and they've made you so sick for so long, it's like, get him out of my sight, basically. Yeah. And I'll take 10 million for a player worth 30 for you to get him out of my sight. But it's that 20 million is the difference that plays for XYZ, which then influences your transfer next season or the season after that season. So we need to look at our peers and hope the prices they're able to get for fringe players, fringe youngsters, and we need to be holding ourselves to that standard too. And I think when you get labelled as a soft touch as well, it's very hard to shake that reputation. So where we have a changing of the guard, it's very important that we set our stall out now and we go forward in that fashion. Another question from Sweet Chin Melody. Could we not convert Dan James to a wing-back? Adding to that, what one player would you say has benefited the most from a positional change, like Mascherano from CDM to CB, Ramos from right-back to centre-back, Bell from left back to left wing? I'll start with you, Steve. I know you're great on your feet.
Thank you. I don't think Dan James has the ability to play wing back. So he's good. He's got good stamina. He's got good pace, but technical ability. Like, if I look at some of the really good wing backs out there, he doesn't line up with them. Do you know what I mean? If I look at someone like Hakimi, who just went to PSG, he doesn't compare, he doesn't come anywhere near. So just because he's not a really great winger doesn't mean that we can sort of just degrade him into a wing back and it will make him good, because he's not good enough at the attacking side of things, and wing backs have to be really good there. And defensively, we'd have to teach him that position as well. So I think it'd be more in our best interest to try and get a retail value of him, which I think he has. In terms of player like switching position, I think Yaya Toure, probably like DM to attacking mid, is a fairly good one. The Bale one as well, yeah, left wing back to attacking mid, left winger is another good one. So yeah, probably those two, I'd say.
Cool. I'll throw one in the mix as a bit of an old school one. Ludovic Julie. He was a playmaking like number 10 at Monaco, and they turned him into a third man runner at Barcelona, which was crazy. Which just shows the levels. Like, he was the hub of that Monaco team, like the guy, the brains, the guy who made shit happen. Barca, just listen, just keep making them third man all day long. And he was really, really good for them. So, yeah. Ludovic Julie is one that comes to mind for me. Have you got any, Dre?
The only one I can think United-wise, Antonio Valencia wasn't that bad at right-back, you know?
Valencia days, obviously.
The last couple of years, he fell off a bit, but when he got moved to right-back, solid. So it's the only one I can think of the top of my head at the moment.
For me, like, my defining Valencia memories are that rocket shot against, was it Blackburn, where he smashed it in, and Pep was calling him one of the best wingers in the world. And when he tried to squeeze Raheem Sterling's head off of his neck when England played Ecuador. Those are the two things that come to mind when I think of Antonio Valencia.
I just remember him drilling it low every single time and hitting
the never first ever match. Trying
hitting
to
the first match. Do you know what one of the worst things about Valencia was? Yeah, it's mad that he became our captain after this.
I was about to say he was a club captain.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I never heard him do an interview in English.
He couldn't speak English.
He couldn't speak English.
So how is this your club captain? But anyway, that's like, who was doing the team talk? That is bonkers. But he felt under so much pressure under the number 7 shirt that he That is poor. That is poor. Even Michael Owen held that, man.
Imagine being like, oi, this shirt is rattling me so much.
I don't want it. He dropped all of that in Ecuadorian as well. So.
Yeah. That's so true. He was quite the character. Then he started the bleaching phase as well. Like, he was a guy, wasn't he?
Been one of the Jackson 5.
Yeah, by the end, he could have definitely been one of the Jackson 5, man. He was looking closer and closer to Jermaine each day, man. Cool. And last one is from Shanna _ CJ. Do we keep Dan James as a squad player or sell him and play the kids? We've answered that. And also, with the possibility of Lingard staying, he adds more depth to the squad. So, do we need Dan James? Again, we've kind of given our thoughts on Lingard and Dan James and where they're going next.
People really want Dan James gone, innit? That seems to be all the listeners' questions.
That seems to be every question that we're being asked. It's in regards to Dan James. And I understand, like, he came in with a big reputation. I remember that video. It was literally just him running in a straight line. And it was in the Championship. So, that was never going to translate to the Premier League. When he started and he's kind of scored, 3 in his first 4, people were piping up, Dan James, we've done it again and whatnot. But he's just a horrid, horrid footballer. Like, for our level, he's a horrid footballer.
It was obvious, man. He wasn't even touted as one of the players of the Championship when he came to us.
Exactly. He was supposed to be like, you know when we see people sign like Eze's and the Madison and whatnot? I'm like, oh, there's talent in the Championship. You guys are missing out. That was our equivalent of their talent in the Championship. But it actually ended up being a Championship-level talent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we shot ourselves in the foot there in terms of Dan James. And I think it's been great. We've made that flip on him. And we got better kids than him in the academy, man. Yeah, and we can give them games. So, Dre, I want to thank you for coming through. I will definitely have you on again if you're available and you're interested. Stevie, always a pleasure. Your unique insight is one of the cornerstones of the Mugger podcast. So keep doing your thing.
Like I keep saying, ahead of my time. Rubbishing me about Maguire being a leader. And
he's not a fucking leader.
We're not doing this.
He's not a fucking leader. He's not that. You tried to sneak a sneaky jab in there.
I just want the Mugger viewers to know. Because someone said you run me off the podcast that week. But now...
I did run you off the podcast.
Now he's a transformational England captain.
Here's what they said. Mariah ran Stevie off the podcast. I'd be surprised if he ever lets him on again.
But
I responded to that because I'm not going to let him slander your name. I said, nah, Stevie's my guy. He's always welcome on the pod. So I didn't disagree with running you off because I did. But I disagree with the thought that I wouldn't let you come back on the podcast again.
I disagree with both schools of thought.
in terms of Maguire, he's definitely shown a level that I didn't know he had in him. So I'm more than happy to be proven wrong. I don't think he was the leader of that back line. Again, I don't think he played the lead. He was good. He was very good within his role. What do you think, Dre? You could be the tie splitter.
You know what? Yeah. At Man United, he wasn't a leader. But I've been one of Harry Maguire's biggest critics. But at the Euros, he was the leader of that back line, bro. Hopefully, he can bring that to United.
Okay. All right. I take back my comment about you coming back, Dre. You know what, fair enough. You know, if he ends up proving me wrong, that's even better. He's gonna be a quality player for our team. So let's see. I think he's in a period where he's very confident in himself and he's very confident in his football. Is this a purple patch or have you ascended? And is this now the level you're gonna give us?
Him having that rest, him getting injured was probably one of the best things for him, you know, because he could rest up his body, rest mentally for coming into the Euros. So in the game was ridiculous.
I think for England, he's particularly good.
Even it was off the back of the 2018 World Cup that
his name got the hype, isn't it? That was where he made his name. But if you look at him on the balance of the season, he went and did that nonsense in Greece and he started really badly. And that was probably below his level. I think if you look at him January to June, he was pretty good. He wasn't flawless, but he was pretty good. So yeah, man, kudos to him. He's sort of dug his heels in and delivered some good performances.
I agree. So hopefully he continues that into the next season. Mm. Listen, Shaw, Maguire, Varane, Wan-Bissaka, that's a strong back line.
Well, that derby game, Aaron Wan-Bissaka sleeping again for the goal. Yeah. Was it the goal? No, it was a chance. In this cross coming. Well,
he loves giving those bad boys away, man. Rocking. He loves his giving those bad boys away. Like anywhere he could, he's all about the recovery tackles in the air, on the ground. Like he doesn't want to be in the right. He doesn't want to be in the right position. That's boring. Why am I going to be in the right position? Like,
I fear for him when he turns 30 and he has no pace and he's still doing them wild slide tackles.
It wouldn't even be moved into auxiliary centre back by then.
No, he hasn't got the feet.
All right, cool, lads. Once again, thank you both for coming on this evening. Take care. Peace. Yes.
Rashford, he's in here. He scores! Marcus Rashford takes yet another step up the ladder. Thank you. And it's a lad from Manchester who scored.
Only chance in my team like Man U. Yeah, like Man U.
Trying to get in again.
Thank
he's
you,
in again.
Man.
He
guys in my head like shampoo. If I late, my squad might bang you. Only chance in my team like Man U. Yeah, like Man U.
Mane. Ready! It defies description. How about
Martial is isolated. Skirtle here.
Till the bar's done. Slap one, slap two, that she danced on. Like Rashford, I'm a fast one.
Thank you, man.
Bars in my head like shampoo. Violate my squad, might bang you. Bang. Only champs in my team like Man U. Yeah, like Man U. Thank you, man. Bars in my head like shampoo. Violate my squad, might bang you. Bang. Only champs in my team like Man U. Yeah, like Man U.
Social Podcast Network.